Welcome to Get a Grip with Max Homa and Shane Bacon, a production of iHeartRadio. Sports fans, golf fans, or just fans, welcome to Get a Grip. And it's the end of the year, and we've been putting together some of our best of episodes from the year. And we wanted to throw together a best of tour winners. And of course, that seems strange considering most of the time this podcast was occupied by Mr. Max Homa. But we had other people involved in the podcast that went on to win. And then we pulled one of our favorite interviews from the clubhouse days as well, a first-time victory there for U of A's own Nate Lashley. So it's just a thrown-together piece of some of our favorite conversations with players that pulled off victories from the season. We have, of course, Max after Riviera. And then Joel Damon, if you remember, Joel joined us on the podcast. He filled in for Max after the PGA Championship back in 2020 when Joel had a great week. And then, of course, we had Joel on as our first ever guest when he pulled off his first victory at the Corrales Punta Cana back in March. So it's Max, it's Joel, it's Nate. It's best of tour winners. I think you'll enjoy. Watching a pal achieve his lifelong dream in real time, fans, Max Homa, let's go.
Let's go, man. This borderline feels fake. But even if it is fake, I'm going to ride out whatever dream I'm in and just kind of enjoy it.
Max Homa is your 2021 Genesis Invitational Champion, a win in a playoff. I texted you a little bit of this, but I just wanted to read it off again because winning at Riviera is what legends do, bro. This is a legendary thing from legends. A list of winners over the years at Riviera: Ben Hogan, Sam Snead, Byron Nelson, Lloyd Mangrum, baby,
hey!
Arnold Palmer, Hale Irwin, Tom Watson, Johnny Miller, Fred Couples, Tom Kite, Charlie Sifford, Faldo, Els, Mickelson, Scott, Dustin Johnson, and Max Homa. What is going on? Like, just how are you?
I don't know. I promised on this podcast like 6 months ago that I would never get drunk for one of these things again because I tapped myself out, but I did not promise I'd never be hungover again. So I am alive. I'm happy. I'm so stoked. I finally got in the same line of talking as Lloyd Mangrum, the Iceman or whatever. I forget his nickname.
Right, that's right.
It's an enormous honor after all of the attention you've given him. It feels good to be up there in the ranks, you know? We finally have something in common. But yeah, no, I feel good. It was a whirlwind yesterday. I don't know. It's one of those I honestly don't know how to explain it. I've been trying to think of the way to talk about it on this podcast for like nearly 20 hours now, but it's weird. People always say dream come true, dream come true, dream come true, and it's true to an extent. Like, I always wanted to win my first PGA Tour event at somewhere, but it's not like I had a vision of winning it at Quail Hollow. Like, I always just wanted to win one. I've literally dreamed of winning golf tournaments at Riviera. Like, I know we've talked about it on this podcast from last year, like, not winning hurt, but it was fun to play well at Riviera. But like, it was kind of good because I got to feel that sensation of like kind of being near the top of the leaderboard at a place that I like, it actually kind of makes me well up a little bit. And then this year to be in that position to know I had the experience last year, it was weird. Like, I just felt, I feel like incredibly, like a different kind of happy. I don't really know how to explain it. I truly don't know if I won a Masters if I'd feel like this. Like, I know it'd be a bigger accomplishment, and I understand the volume of that and like the magnitude of that. But this golf tournament is why I play golf, pretty much. And to have Tiger Woods there, and like, I don't know, like, what the heck, man? Like, what are we doing here?
Yeah, well, I mean, I tweeted that thing out yesterday. It's like how it started, how it's going. Like, you know, you send the tweet out in 2013. And I don't even know. This was back when Twitter was a lot of fun. And I don't even know if yesterday Twitter was fun, by the way. I'm not sure if people totally understand, you know, the golf course, the tournament. I mean, I know they talked a lot about on the telecast, as they should have, you going with your dad when you were a young kid. And I know Daniel Rappaport asked the question about what your 8-year-old self would say. I watched your press conference, by the way. I think it's the first time I've ever done that in my life on YouTube. Jeff Shackelford asked, I thought, a great question. I was texting with him and he said he got it kind of from this podcast when you were talking about how, like, where would this rank? And you said in your press conference last night, you said 1A, 1B, 1C. And I think the point you're making here is, it, sure, the Masters and the U.S. Open and the Open Championship and all these things are huge major championships. But for you personally, this is the one you always wanted.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a fact. I understand that this is not the biggest golf tournament in the world. Like, I truly get that. But at the same time, it's like I've never dreamed of – I haven't dreamt of playing – like, or of winning a Super Bowl. I've never dreamt of winning an NBA championship because that's not how I was raised. Like, I never thought I'd be in the NBA. I never thought I'd be in the NFL. Like, those things never crossed my mind. But I have dreamt of winning at Riviera because since I was like, my dad and I were talking about it. I think I was 2 years old when he took me to the first tournament, which is so outrageous because I always get mad when parents take their kids who like just have no, you have no control over them. But my dad did that with me, you know, and he brought me to Riviera. I think I went like 18 years in a row. I even remember flying home from school one year to go in college to go watch. And I don't know. It's like every memory I've got, I've watched Tiger once lost in his only playoff to Billy Mayfair, but it got moved to Valencia Country Club. Like, what are the odds? And so I got to watch that in my backyard. And they moved the PGA that year to Riviera. My dad asked me, I was like 6 or 7. My dad asked me if I want to go to the PGA at Riviera, thinking, of course, I'm going to say yes. He got tickets somehow. I said, no, I'm good. Like, I'd rather, whatever, like being a dumb kid. I've sat there when I think it was the biggest playoff in the history of the PGA Tour was there. I think it was like 8 people. Allenby, yep, might have won. I remember him hitting a hybrid. I've literally fallen asleep on the hill on 18 and woken up and my dad wasn't there. And I had a serious panic attack of what I was going to do. Like, I've not only like been there, you know, I have memories. Like, I like feel like I lived there for a while with the PGA Tour. It's crazy. And even in a weirder way, like, I didn't get to play it till I got to college. We played national championship there. And even then it was like sacred grounds. I remember the first time I broke par there, I was like, oh, you know, you got to earn under par here. Like, I learned that pretty quick. Played great at national championship. And I've had these stretches of decent golf there. And I see the golf course so well, but I truly felt like I had some magic because I got one break yesterday that was straight up. I was like, yep. You know, it's my
which one was it?
11. I hit it.
Oh, I was going to ask you about this.
When that ball went through that tree, it was Joe didn't want me to hit the shot. I wanted to hit the shot. I never even considered it going left or right. I just thought I had to keep it low. I pulled it. There's every right in the world for that ball to hit the tree and shoot straight back at my feet. And I'm making bogey. And it got through the tree. And I just thought to myself, I was like, this is my city. It's my golf course. I was like, this is just. I know when you win, Joe mentioned, like, when you win, good things seem to happen at the right time. And that's exactly what happened. And it just felt like that ball went through the tree. I'm like, yeah, of course. Like, it was an odd feeling, but it was like, of course it did. Like, this is my week. I'm the kid from LA. Like, why would this not work out? It is an odd feeling. So I don't know. Like I said, I can't overstate it. Like, this. It's borderline like being like winning an NBA championship, your last game 7 in your backyard basketball hoop. Like, that's what it feels like. Like, where did you learn how to play basketball? Oh, I learned in my backyard. Okay. Well, at some point you're going to go win. And then also your favorite player ever is going to like congratulate you right after in your backyard. Like, that's what it feels like. And I don't know. It's just I never thought I thought if I didn't cry after I won Wells Fargo, I'd never cry at a golf tournament. And I was 100% embarrassed, but also kind of happy that it like happened yesterday because, you know, yeah, I get it. I lost my cool card, lost the tough stuff. But at the same time, it literally hit me and it was fun to feel that because I don't know, to me, that means that it is as important as I make it out to be.
Yeah. And I think I'd like you to get into this because I don't know if everybody understands that it's not just you. I mean, it's Joe as well. I mean, I think you said a little bit of that in the interview, but it's not just because this is huge for you, but it's you and a best friend of yours, a legit best friend, not a Max Homa best friend that he says about everybody. And like he's there next to you the whole time. And I mean, I could only imagine. I was texting him last night. He's just like, it just kept writing, unbelievable. You know, he just couldn't believe it. But talk about Joe, like the importance of this event to Joe in winning in LA as well.
Yeah, it's such a good point. I mean, Joe was staying at home at his parents' house. You know, finally this year, like because of the traffic situation in LA, unfortunately due to COVID, but fortunately for traffic, like you can get places in like a reasonable amount of time. So he was staying at home. And when we were leaving, like his dad drove down the stuff. Like that's how close we are. And that's how close we grew up. And we've always talked about it in like on a tangent, like we don't get too close to it, but we've always talked about how much the West Coast swing means to us, how fun it is to play. And they all feel like home events. Palm Springs feels like a home event. Obviously Scottsdale feels like a home event. And then we have Torrey feels like a home event. Pebble feels like a home event. LA is a home event. There's like the slight difference. It is an actual home event, especially when we have like the traffic like this, because we actually see people. So it's just, we've always talked about it. He basically raised me to be a Dodger fan. My parents are not Dodger fans. He basically got me into being a Dodger fan. Him, my buddy, Johnny. He helped raise me as a golfer, essentially. His favorite golfer is Tiger. My favorite golfer is Tiger. I don't know if we can, Joe's favorite golf swing ever made is on video. He showed me on Tuesday. It's from the 7th tee at Riviera. Like he's from like 8 years ago. So like the place means a lot to both of us, but the city of Los Angeles means a ton. I mean, you just can't imagine. I don't know what two LA kids feel. We sweated out like 5-6 years of the Dodgers, like almost
right.
and I don't know, this year, I feel like we were talking about wanting to be a part of that Lakers and Dodgers thing. And I know it's corny and now it's kind of a joke, but at the same time, I don't know. I felt like he and I were on the same wavelength of let's do it for this city of Los Angeles. It's a weird year. You know, we've had a lot of crazy stuff happen, obviously. I mean, shoot, we lost Kobe Bryant a year ago. We've just wanted to be a part of the LA stuff. And Joe, especially being, like I said, someone who's like brought me up on being an LA kid. It was cool to enjoy that with him, because you could feel, we just kept saying the same thing he must have texted you, but we were just like, are you kidding me? Like what did we just do? Like, how did we just do this? And at the same time, also not being like, that shot, I don't know, because the first thing he told me after you know, Tony missed on 14 in the playoff, I don't know what I said to him. I hit him pretty hard, and then he grabbed my neck and he said, I told everybody after Palm Springs you're gonna win at Riviera this year. And I'm like, how did you call that one? He goes, I knew it. I said, you're playing too good. We're not gonna fail two times in a row on the West Coast. You're winning Riviera. So like I said, even for him, he's got that kind of magic feeling from being in LA, but being at Riviera especially.
Dude, it's so weird. I had a similar feeling this week. I mean, I told you this, I think the first thing I sent you after Tony missed, but like I didn't text you all week. And
yeah,
I usually text you throughout the week. Like I send you stuff and we'll talk a little bit about golf, or we're talking about NBA or something like that. The only text I sent you was the golf tees that came out, the wash your hands golf tees, which are already sold out, by the way. And I that was the only thing I sent you. And it was funny, a couple times I'd like pulled my phone out to send something, and I was like, you know what? I'm good. And it was just so weird. I had this feeling all day. I had this feeling. You had this look on your face, even last week when we talked, the way you sounded, and you know, you didn't get discouraged after Palm Springs. I even saw you got a question about that in the press conference last night. And, you know, you said it, what did you, I think you said something about, it was like a failure or something was the question.
The guy threw if you don't... me like a Chris Paul lob to Blake Griffin, basically for a mental thing. He said, what did you learn from your failure in Palm Springs? And I said, you only fail if you don't learn from your mistakes.
Right. Yeah. But, you know, you didn't get discouraged. And I got to be honest with you, you know, last year, kind of late in this season, you seemed discouraged. You know, you seemed frustrated with your golf game. Like you didn't seem like you were having a whole bunch of fun playing. And I think that was the big switch, right? Joe talked to you about the mental side. I know he talked to Lacey as well about, you know, just you working on the mental side of stuff, because you work so hard on your golf swing all the time. You work so hard on the physical parts of golf, but you've got to focus on the mental side. And it was just, you know, the Palm Spring thing felt like a learning experience. You know, you go to the waste management, and you even said on this podcast last week, you know, you go, I feel like I could have won waste management, even though I finished 40th because I hit the ball so good. And you go to Pebble and you're right there all day long with a chance. You know, you kept having a chance and you got kind of a bad break and you bounced right back. Even the double bogeys this year, Max, you know, you're making doubles and you're literally making birdie every single hole right after. I saw a stat. I think it was some crazy putting stat. You're the first person in the ShotLink era to one putt his first 11 holes in a tournament this week. You did that at Riv, like all of these things building up to this moment, yet you still have to endure more, right? It's so hard to win, dude. Like I kept telling Cindy this yesterday, we're all watching, right? I just kept telling her, it's so hard to freaking win. Nobody gives it to you. And I kept telling her the one freaking time this Tony Finau guy is going to do it is against our boy. And you looked so positive the whole time and you just looked so comfortable even after 18. It was just, it looked from afar like you kind of knew.
Yeah, it kind of felt, I don't know, it felt like that. I truly have been since Mexico been playing like really good golf, even at home. If I would just go play with the boys, like I felt very, very comfortable all parts of my game. Obviously everybody has moments where something feels out of line, but in general, like I've been feeling really good. So it was just kind of a matter of getting my brain linked up to my golf swing. I think the hard part for someone like me, who had only won one time before, who doesn't have just like, you know, bazillions of dollars, who can just like rest on, okay, I'm just going to be patient. I'm just going to take my time. I'm going to, you know, at some point it's going to happen. The hard part for someone like me is you want to take advantage of the weeks you play well in your head. And that's that's kind of a negative way to look at it, because it's saying I'm not going to do that next week. So waste management beat me up a little bit, and it was hard. It was hard on my, it was heavy on my heart, because I Brooks played great, and I don't know if I would have beat him, but all I know is that I hit the ball well enough to be in the mix, and I putt so bad for basically 3.5 days that like I got 42nd, and it weighed on me, because I'm like, dude, like you can't play. I don't know if I could play a whole lot better than that tee to green. Like I had it. I hit a couple balls out of bounds, sure, so I could have played a little better, but in general, couldn't have felt any better. So I go to Pebble and my golf swing feels awful. All of a sudden, my putting stroke feels great. And you, again, like I said, for someone in my position, I was like, come on, like this, it doesn't seem fair. And that's an interesting word, because in golf, there is no fair. Earn right. It, take it. Like there's no one's good. Like you said, winning's hard. No one's going to give you anything. You're going to have to beat somebody at some point. Someone's going to be playing well. So, but I felt bummed out. And I feel like getting through last week and turning kind of a negative feeling on Tuesday, Wednesday into a positive week was huge, because I showed up this week at Riviera. I knew my swing was going to feel better. I was in like two less layers than I was in Pebble Beach and all the you know, gear. My coach Mark there, like I just knew I was going to hit it better. So I was like, if you can keep whatever we just did mentally at Pebble and put it in a box and use it in LA, we'll be fine. And the comfort I've had for a while, feeling like I'm going to be fine, like my swing's in a good spot, stroke's in a good spot, my short game's in a good spot, like just the comfort of that is interesting, because you kind of just don't ever freak out. So I guess this week I was lucky, but Fred Couples, who I you know, he's a Southern California dude or lives in Southern California. He's been texting me all week and even after last week, but especially this week, like after every round. And I don't know why he's so cool, but he just was. And he was like, hey, he basically, the main thing he said was, hey, to win a Riviera, it takes solid rounds or solid golf, and you're playing the most solid golf of anybody right now. And it kind of resonated. I was like, I am playing very solid. I haven't won, but I think yesterday was like my 14th straight round at par or better. So I was like, I'm playing good golf. Just keep playing good golf. What Fred said, they just say, just keep playing good. So I kind of turned my brain off to what the leader was doing, and I kind of just played. And I was like, my golf's really good. Someone's going to have to earn it to beat me. And, you know, I'm a 3 footer away from winning it outright, you know, and I guess that was the feeling of the whole week was I knew my game was there. It just had to show up kind of like by Thursday a little bit. And I knew my mental game was far superior even finally to my game because I wasn't tripping about anything. I just was ready. And when I say stuff like after the Palm Springs that like, you know, I'll be back and I'll be better. Like, I mean that. Like I sit there and I think of what I could have done better, what I did really well too, though. Like I try to calculate all that. I go through, hey, like, was I too, like, I know we joke about it. Was I too serious? Was I too goofy? Was I too this? Was I too that? Like, try really, truly, like, vibe that and feel what I think. And at a point, I think I don't think I was trying too hard, but I definitely think I was walking too fast and I was doing things too quickly. And today I legitimately got a dream pairing. I thought I was going to be in the last group with Sam and Matt, which I was very excited about. Matt Fitzpatrick, I mean. And I was very excited about that because I wanted to see what the leaders do. And I don't. I get bumped by DJ, didn't know the rule, whatever, it worked out. And I see my next group is with Matt Jones and legitimately, you know, my partner at the Zurich, my
like
guy.
Your top Goose. Two best friends, like, right, on tour?
Yeah. Like him and Joel and Hubbard are basically the three guys I truly believe like I'd be good friends with outside of golf. But Taylor's my guy. I've known him since like freshman year of college. And I can't be more thankful of him throughout like all of Sunday. Dude, like I was getting nervous and I felt like anytime I started walking fast, I would lag back and be like, no, I'm going to talk to Taylor. And Taylor would just tell me stories or talk or like have fun. Walking up 17 and 18, he's telling me this long story. And it was so great because I'm walking up 18 as nervous as I can be. And I'm waiting on the tee for T to like finish his story, and we're walking, and I'm like for the first time ever, like the last person in line on the hill up to 18. And I text him after, so I owe you. Like, I don't know if he did it actively. I bet he did because he's just the best dude ever. But I was like, I owe you, man. Like that was so. Like, I don't know, stars align, man. It's crazy. I don't know. Sorry, guys. I feel like I'm just like dry, like. Digressing,
but this is the best part of the pod is the rambling
part.
My brain
is absolutely spinning. It's a weird. I mean, I went toe to toe. I felt like with the best player in the world on Saturday, and then the morning of Sunday, and I held my own. And then to get to kind of have a walk in the park with like my boys, Matt Jones and Taylor Gooch, the next day or the in the afternoon, I was like, wow, you know. I was like, I felt like I earned a walk in the park because I just, you know, I played DJ at a place he loves. Same thing. I felt the same thing with Rory at Quail Hollow, two places they love. And they're obviously some of the maybe the best golfers of all time. And I was like, all right, I earned a leisurely walk with the fellas. Like, let me get out of this. You know, Joe said it best. He goes, let Sam and Matt have to deal with Dustin. You did what you're supposed to do when you play with Dustin. And I was like, I really did. I beat him by one. I hung the hell in there. Let me take a breath because it's obviously a lot playing with the guy who's that good. And you know, it's weird when you play with your friends as good at golf as they can be, you still feel kind of comfy. Like we all have something to talk about. It's not forced. And it taught me a little bit, like, you know, slowing down is, you know, I've kind of thought to myself for a while that I do think that I can be mentally like a little less talkative and be okay. But I do think that slowing down to walk with Taylor and to like, I don't know, get
just take a moment.
Yeah. Take a moment was important. So that's something I'm going to take with me going forward. I think the intensity is okay. I think, you know, if I wasn't with Taylor, I probably wouldn't have been chatting it up, and that's okay because I you know, literally can't, like, I don't do that with people like that I'm not close with. But I think you can blend the two and like you said, kind of take a beat while also not needing to be like, oh, hi, you know, what, you know, how are your kids? Like, you can be in the moment. But I think for me, like, I've always been like kind of try to push this idea away. But like, I think it's true, like slowing down and breathing and not feeling like even the walk is intense. Like if the golf's gonna be intense, like let's take a moment and be calm and easygoing with it. And you know, I learned that today because of, honestly, because of my group. I swear that that group, that pairing was like 70% of why I played so well, because I just felt like I've been talking about being in flow my whole season so far. And I just felt like I was in flow. I was playing with the dudes and hitting golf shots and hitting it, finding it, you know, like it was an easy day.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back. All right, from Max, we'll go to Joel. And one of our favorite people in the world, one of our favorite professional athletes, and definitely one of our favorite golfers, and Joel Damon. I'm going to guess you'll hear more from Joel on this year podcast in 2022. But for now, let's take it back to 2021 and Joel coming off his first PGA Tour win. He's the only man that's ever held a microphone on this podcast. And Max, he's our first guest ever. Joel Damon joins the show. Appreciate the time, Joel.
Happy to be with you guys again. Obviously, it's a momentous occasion in my career. So maybe we can do this more often. That'd be neat.
So it's Tuesday evening, your time, about 5 o'clock in Texas. So I've got to ask first question. You get to pick how your body currently feels after a couple of days of celebration. A, you're at McCarran for an early Sunday flight home. B, it's the last day of a member at Mesa CC. C, it's the days after the Huskies take down Alabama to win a national championship. Or D, just kind of how you always feel. You get to pick.
Wow, that's quite the list. I hope all of those happen for me sometime. I actually feel pretty good. I shut it off. I've been off for about 24 hours now. I have a Gatorade. I've been having some waters today. Didn't make it to the golf course yet, but I feel okay.
I would vote on all those, by the way, that the one leaving Mesa the next morning after a round of Mesa is easily the worst I felt. After Joel invited me, I thought generously, now I realize I was just somebody's like victim for the Mesa member guest. That next morning was the happiest I've ever seen to hear rain coming down on my roof, knowing that I was not going to have to play golf with Joel again. Joel, congratulations, buddy. I got to say, I don't want to make it about myself, but I was so happy. I was over the moon. I can't imagine how you guys felt. That was an exciting tournament from beginning to end too, because I saw your name on Thursday up at the, near the top of the leaderboard. So I felt like it was, you know, obviously going to be a good week, an exciting week to watch. So I don't know, man. I feel like we're all pretty good friends with some people out here, but then there's some that we're actually really good friends with, like maybe not just golf acquaintances. That was one for the good guys for me. And I had a blast. I know that's not a question I don't interview often. I just needed to say it.
Well, thank you. I guess now you know how I feel when you won the second one.
Not the first one.
That's the first one, but the one riff. Yeah.
Well, that was going to be my first question was, you know, when are you going to win a tournament that I'm there for?
Yeah, well, we can't all win them with the best in the world yet. I think that's the next one up. I think you have to learn to crawl before you walk and walk before you run. I think this is kind of my walking moment.
Did you drink enough that Sunday night to have to crawl?
No, sneaky, pretty behaved. I there was kind of a moment where I could have turned it on, like and the level goes up a hair, but Lana had drank enough all day that she was in fine form by about 9 o'clock. So there wasn't, and Gino was, you know, he had an early flight out, so he was on the couch somewhat early. So overall, it was a nice night, but it didn't reach the levels that it maybe I always thought it might get to after W.
I talked to Lana and she was drunk.
She was not in good shape.
Yeah, when she left the course, yeah.
So Joel, the win, more than I can really remember watching the celebration and just listening to you talk about, you know, Gino and your wife and everybody that is involved in your life in terms of competitive golf, it felt like, we hear we a lot, it felt very much like a team victory for you guys. Can you just dive into how much this meant for your wife and for Gino and for your bubble to see you pull out the victory? Because I know how much it meant for you professionally, but how much it meant for everybody involved.
Yeah, I think it was obviously huge. I kind of used to make fun of people who use the whole team thing in golf because there's only one guy hitting the shot and it's kind of all on you, no matter how good your team is around you. But man, these last couple of years, it really is kind of a village for me. My circle isn't very big, but I've surrounded myself with really special people who care about me. You know, obviously they're all helping in my career, but it's more about, you know, just making sure everything's kind of good across the board and then golf follows. So, you know, for June and I growing up together, from, you know, we're kind of teenagers and best friends. He married, my wife and I a couple of years ago. So he's been through it all, the ups and downs. He sacrificed a lot. He's got two kids at home that he doesn't get to see as often. And for Lana, I mean, she's been around for 9 years, married for two. She worked two jobs to help pay the bills when I was on the mini tours. She sacrificed a lot. And so it's just fun that we all kind of, you know, we're all hoping for this moment. We all thought it would come. We all believed it. But I think it's even more special after kind of the rough 7 or 8 weeks I've had to start the calendar year that it would kind of come after, you know, a rough stretch golf, definitely the roughest stretch I've had the last 3 or 4 years on tour. And my coach, Rob Rochelle, who's out of Scottsdale, who's been incredible. John Rehorn in Oregon State. He's been there since he recruited me to UW. So just a lot of people that have put in a lot of time and a lot of effort, and they've always believed in me. And, maybe even things weren't so great. Or things weren't as promising. It's easy to back somebody when they're playing well every year and it's kind of cruise control. It's a lot harder to stick by the guy when, you know, maybe he's not putting in the time or effort that you think he should be, or, you know, he's struggling a little bit. So definitely a wee for me. There's a lot of validation there for a lot of people, and just a really special moment for sure.
Do you think that your wee has like kind of believed in you even more than you believe in you? Not just recently, but just in general.
Are you leading to something there?
A little bit.
No, I mean, we've had a couple chats about it, especially since Riv. I know, slightly intoxicated Sunday night of your win at Riv when you got back home, but it was one of those things about just believing in yourself. And, a lot of people for a long time have told me how good I am. And I probably didn't really believe it as much as I should, or, I think it took this down kind of this last, I mean, Max certainly inspired me with his win, and turning it around, you know, cause he didn't have a great last summer, fall per se. And he's kind of, you know, he worked really hard this off season, and you're, you know, seeing the results early on here. So for me, it was just staying positive when, things weren't going great, which it's hard to do. It's easy to be positive when you're playing well, but it's like, if you're playing bad and you have negative attitude, it's not going to work at all. So staying positive. Gino's always been positive. You know, my wife still believed in me, and it wasn't like I was on this, you know, like complete crazy, you know, it wasn't like I was about to lose my need to be, kind of stuck. And then I had to believe in myself, because, if you don't, you know, no one else will. So it started kind of just with a belief in myself these last couple weeks that every week it was going to be the one that turned it around. And I told people, for a lot of people, like, oh, Joel told me this is a week that it turns around, but I've said that for 5 or 6 weeks now. So it was just a matter of time.
I'm a huge fan of that process.
Yeah. And it worked out that way. And I know that Gino, number one, believed in me long before anyone else did. And he always thought I was going to be a tour winner. And that's kind of why he hopped on the bandwagon. Not the bandwagon. He hopped on the bag so early, and he's willing to make those sacrifices, knowing that, you know, there was certainly a lot of good ahead of us.
And I want to ask both of you guys this, Max as well, on the back end, if you could answer, but you guys both have similar stories with your guys on the bag. I mean, they're buddies before they're caddies, you know? I mean, mm-hmm. I think you guys both consider them best friends. When you're going through a run like you went through, Joel, I mean, I think you missed 6 to 7 cuts headed in. And obviously, you're a guy, and I was listening to your press conference earlier today, and you're a guy that prides himself on how consistent you play and how many cuts you make. And that's kind of something, your bread and butter as a professional golfer is consistency. When you're going through that, how much does it help having someone not just on the bag, knowing they've got to keep you guys up because it's part of their job, but keeping you up because they truly believe it because they're such good friends with you?
Yeah, I mean, I know that, Gino, I mean, even when it wasn't going well, like, hey, stick with me here. Like, he'd try to find small little things, even when I was missing the cut. I was like, hey, this improved a lot this week. Or, you know, maybe I'm 5 out of the cut with 3 holes to play, no chance. He's like, hey, why don't you try to hit this golf shot so that maybe next week when you do need it to make the cut, or you need to hit it down the stretch, like, that you can hit it. Like, let's do something a little uncomfortable here to make sure it's fine, you know, kind of on the back end type thing. And also just getting up enthusiastically, like if I shot, I shot 78 the first round at Torrey, no chance to make the cut. And he was there in not so great weather on Friday with a smile on his face and enthusiastic and ready to go. And, you know, it's easy to kind of mope around and just carry the heavy stuff and throw a couple numbers at you and just get through the day. But yeah, even when it wasn't so great, he was still showed up every day with a great attitude and made sure that I was along for the ride and that I stayed upbeat as well.
Speaking of the support, I happened to be at Mesa without you for one of the few times, the 2 weeks prior to your win. And obviously got to see a bunch of your buddies, members out there. And it was fun because obviously a main topic of discussion whenever I'm there is we talk about you and Harkins and all that. And we were talking about you and they said, yeah, you know, we just hope Joel can turn around a little bit. And we were talking about, I was like, oh yeah, I mean, well, it's just everybody goes through, like, you know, as we talk about on this often, even Dustin goes through little stretches where it's not great. It just needs a turn. But to hear how positive they all were after I would say anything like that, oh no, we know, you know, he's Joel's amazing and he'll be just fine. How cool has it been to have all the support from them? I know you mentioned it in your post round speech, but like how cool has it been to have, so, I mean, it's a lot of people there that like the biggest Joel Damon fans you could find.
Yeah, I am lucky. I'm not, you know, I'm not at Whisper Rock. I'm not at Silverleaf. I'm not at Mirabelle. I'm not someone at the super exclusive private clubs per se, but I think I'm at Mesa because it kind of reminded me of my hometown. The head pro there is just a really fun guy to be around, treats everyone, you know, kind of the same. And I get treated just kind of as a guy out there as well at Mesa. And it's, you play fast, drink beer, listen to music. It's just kind of a blue collar, fun golf course. And those guys really have became some of my best friends. I've spent a lot of time out there with them, but they're all super supportive. You know, it's one of those things, like, I know they sent me a couple of videos, actually. Mike Davidson and John Merwin, a couple of the guys I'm real close with, sent a video of me finishing on 18, and there's 50 plus people in the bar and they all got to go crazy. So it's one of those things, like, you always want to be able to do that. You always want to, like, hey boys, open up the tab, I'm coming back next week type of thing. And it's just really fun that kind of moment came to happen. And then they were all there drinking a bunch of beer. I haven't actually figured out what that total is yet. And I don't think I want to know until the end of the month, but it's just a good group of guys. It's a large collection of kind of different backgrounds and different people, but they're all just a fun, you know, fun place to be. I think Max and Joe went out there the other time. So just, they kind of accept anybody and everybody as long as you play fast and have fun. And just a special golf course for sure. I mean, it's not the best golf course in the Valley, but I think it has the best people.
Can't stop me, I'm a champion, I'm a champion. When you made the putt to win, it was like a 3-footer, and you get up and you give 2-footer. You give
it felt like 10 feet.
Well, you give Campos the hug. Tell me the honest truth. You had to think that was Gino, right?
Well, no.
Okay.
I knew that
he looked like you wanted Rafa to carry you off the green when you jumped into his arms.
There was so much pressure and so much anxiety and like, oh my God, like, can I just please, like, relief to just finish this thing off. I'd been leading all day. I hadn't, you know, hadn't played great on the back nine. I was just trying to get in the hole. And when the thing finally went in, like, so like hands are shaking so much. Like, I was like, just don't miss this damn thing. Like, somehow get in the hole. And I, you want to do like the proper thing of like, shake his hand, shake his caddy Eric's hand and like, and then go celebrate. But there was no chance. It was just like, I saw him. I was like, okay, do that. And then I was like, find Gino as fast as possible. What I didn't realize is that Gino had dropped the pin on Rafa and his caddy. And then, I don't know, my putter, Scotty Cameron's on the ground, and Gino and I step on my putter as well. So it's like, it was just a mess going on there for about 30 seconds of, because you don't really remember anything, really. It wasn't like, it was just kind of reactionary. And then I was like, kind of when Lana finally got done screaming and yelling, I'm like, oh crap, I think I still need to go like shake Eric, the caddy's hand. I should probably get my stuff in order here, but it's just so chaotic. And, you know, I wish in my head, it always is going to go way cooler and smoother than this, but just kind of raw emotions. And, you know, it's been a long time coming.
Well, that was one of my questions. I was going to ask you, talk to Gino yet to tell him that you're supposed to, you kind of mess with the caddy and hit him maybe with the pin after, before you win, not after.
Right.
It's kind of rubbing it in at that point, trying to stab him in the eyeball.
I don't think he even realized what he had did there. I think he just saw it posted on Twitter actually today, or that he replied. He's like, oh, I didn't even know it happened. So it's one of those things. Yeah. You want to be like a good sport and you want to go over and do the nice thing. But I mean, at that point, it's just kind of all hell breaks loose and you pick up the loose ends later.
We referenced your definitely not all the way to 3 feet foot putt to win. We talked about it a little bit already, but you could kind of make me feel better. I thought you rubbed it in by making it. I thought we could have been a band of brothers. You could have won in the playoff. You know, it's kind of rude of you, but just explain in length how hard that is. Like, I know it's 2 or 3 feet, but how weird is that feeling?
Yeah, it's, I mean, to get it on the green where I did in two, like a very simple two putt, it was a little bit up the hill. It was downwind. It was going to play about flat and there wasn't much break. It was like, okay, like you can't really tell, but the amount, like the hands are visibly shaking. The putter head is not staying still. And there's only a couple times in your life where you can do that. And there's no practicing that. There's no amount of 3 footers you can hit in your life that prepares you for that. Like, it's not a technique thing anymore. It is like just somehow blackout for 5 seconds, hit this putt. And at least your putt, well, let me say in defense of you, Max, I do know that green and 18 inch rib is gnarly. It breaks a pile. It's way faster. Mine was dead straight down.
Significantly.
It was almost unmissable.
I totally agree.
Yeah. So, and I was winning, opposite field event in Punta Cana, and you were trying to win probably your biggest golf tournament. It's non-major. So in those defense, but
thank you for you making me feel better.
It's like trying to, I don't know. It's like shaking so much and trying to do something tack something or put something, a little tiny thing. And I don't know. It's hard to explain. It's just impossible. And when you're thinking, just don't be an idiot. Just don't miss this. But then you're thinking about, well, you have probably had a full minute, maybe even longer, to think about it. So I'm trying not to think about it. I'm trying to look at the waves. I'm trying to do anything. And then it's finally there and you don't even realize what happens. All of a sudden you're like, okay, 2 practice strokes. Okay. Deep breath. Okay. And all of a sudden the ball's gone already. And you're like, what just happened? So there's no
right in the middle though.
It's dead center, baby.
It was dead center. Perfect speed. Yeah, it's not one you can practice. Doesn't matter how many 3 footers you hit on a chalk line. It ain't preparing you for that.
I know you love to give Gino a lot of shit on social media and you guys have a good time. I got to say, I thought trying to decapitate him on the 71st hole was a unique approach to trying to win your first event. Did you know how close you got to him? And did you kind of watch it a couple times?
Yeah, it was one of those, he didn't even know that it happened, I guess. Like, because he was, I guess, kind of like, you know, jumped up or did something kind of with it. So he didn't even know it was close. I've never, you know, I think Billy Horschel might be the best at it. Like, it's a full on toss, but he catches it all the time. It always seems
he
to land.
He practices
like,
it more.
He's got to practice it.
It was obviously a natural reaction, but I feel like I'm a better athlete. I feel like I could just kind of flip it in one spot and not, I will blame the wind. It was blowing 25. I'd say the wind caught it and went over that way. Uh-huh. Yeah. I'm just glad it didn't hit him. Thankfully.
You talked about how nervous you are on obviously on 18 on that putt, but the chip on 17 is pretty damn easy on a Tuesday and a lot harder when your hands are shaking on a Sunday. So I felt like that was just an unbelievable sign of where your game was at. And I know maybe you feel different than it looks out there to us where it just looked very, very basic, but man, that was a really good shot under the gun. Did you feel like you settled it or it's just one of those things where you were just obviously in a great spot technically and it didn't matter if you were a little nervous, it was just going to work.
Yeah. You said it was a very simple shot. It is. It's into the wind. It's off perfect lie, slightly uphill. Like there's not much to it. And I had chipped well all week. I've actually chipped really well kind of this whole year. When you don't hit very many greens, you actually practice your chipping a lot. So I've done that a lot the last 2 months. And even 16, I hit a great chip there. It was a little bit tougher, had to fly it a little more sloppy. This one was just kind of straightforward. And I thought, man, if you can somehow make this, maybe you get a 2-shot lead in the last, and that's a lot better than one. But techniques helped a little bit over it, but it was just, and I was really not physically nervous all day. I mean, I had a little butterflies in the stomach, but nothing. I was totally in control. I felt calm all day. And the first time physically hands started shake and I got like, oh no, was the tap in on that chip. So I kind of just walked up to tap it and get out of the way. And it was only a foot. Like it was unmissable. And my putter head was shaking. And I was like, oh boy. That was the first time all day. So, and then after that, it didn't get any easier. But the chip I wasn't that nervous on, but the putt I was, and it was a full on tap in.
Is that so weird for the both of you, Max as well? How weird is that feeling of the simplicity of golf under the gun when all of a sudden all of the things that you do without even thinking become monumental? Like how weird is that feeling both mentally and physically when, again, you've got a tap in or a 2-footer that you would either be given most of the time you're playing, especially if you're playing with us, we're nice people. But you know, when those things all of a sudden they become, you're thinking about stuff you've never thought about.
They say it gets easier the more time you're in that position. And I've been around a couple times, but I've never, I had a chance at Riv 2 years ago. I had a putt on 17, about a 12-footer to tie the lead on 17. And that was kind of the same thing. Like, but at 12 feet, like you're not really supposed to make it. You're a little more freed up where it gets like close to the hole and you're like supposed to make these things. And like you said, most of the time they're given. It's kind of like when you're playing against that like 7 or 8 handicap who like, oh, it breaks 80 a lot. But if you don't give him any putts, all of a sudden he misses 2 or 3 short ones because he's not used to putting them. It was kind of one of those deals, like, or you'll have the guy at the member guest who's also, he's in front of 50 or 100 people and it's just complete freak out mode. It's kind of like that, I guess, would be. I hope it gets easier the more times I do this. I don't know. Was it easier for, I guess you had such a big lead at Wells, it didn't really matter that much, but.
I feel like I go through the weird ones when you're leading or when just any time you're in contention, you're really nervous. We're like, I'll be standing to the side waiting for my turn to putt. And then I'll be like, oh my God, did I mark my ball or did I just pick it up? Like your brain starts going in the weirdest place. Like, yeah, no, you marked it. Like you do this literally so much in your sleep that you start to forget that you will do it just fine. Routine stuff. All kind of starts to feel to your question, Shane. It starts to feel kind of, it's almost like you're overthinking things that you really actually don't need to think about. Like you don't need to think about all these things, but you get so kind of anal, which is weird because it's coming at a time where you're playing your best golf, you know, like Joel, like
yeah,
playing
your actual best golf.
Yeah. Shane or Joel, question, cause it's an interview. You're somebody, as we talked about earlier, that you go through, as anybody does, confidence in waves. I think that's not abnormal for anybody, pretty much anywhere in life, but especially in golf. There's going to be days where you feel like the best in the world and days where you feel like the worst. But for like your long-term confidence, how do you think this win kind of, where do you think that takes you? You're still going to have blips in the radar where it's not going to be great, but where do you think that'll be able to kind of settle you in the future?
Yeah, I think the first thing is just like having the 2-year exemption. I've never had that before. It's awesome. Like it was as well as I've played the last couple of years. I mean, I finished 38th last year on the FedEx Cup list and I showed up 2 weeks later. It's like, all right, do it again, buddy. You're back at zero. And it was like,
yeah, it's bullshit.
Like, can I get like a half a year or something? Can I get like a, I feel like I should get
2 months
than just like
give you my 2 favorite months.
And, yeah, exactly. Right.
Oh, wait. I have a bad idea. I have a good, bad idea. I'm so sorry to cut you off. Shane, for our podcast, we do good idea, bad idea, whatever. Mm-hmm. Good idea is if you do win an event, but you, or sorry, if you do keep your card, but you don't have like the 2-year exemption, you should get to pick 4 to 6 tournaments that you get to double boost your points for the next season.
Oh, wow. I like that. It's like NBA Jam, you know, like yeah, you get the spot. That's a great idea. I'm in on that. Sorry, Joel.
That's a good one.
We'll let you keep talking. Go back to your life and life changing moments.
Yeah.
Joel.
Yeah. No, it's just that exemption. But with that, it's like, this is my 111th time before I won. And I was like, man, you kind of get to a point where the monkey's kind of on your back a little bit. And you're like, is this ever going to happen? I know it's going to happen. I believe it's going to happen, but is it going to happen? Cause there's a lot of great players who've played a long time. Like think about Charles Howell. Like I think he's only won like 3 or 4 times. Like this is unbelievable. Or you get, there's a lot of great players that have only won a couple times.
So. I mean, Ricky Barnes, his career has been unbelievable. Won an amateur and it's a long stretch. And all of a sudden you have a hard time because now you're the guy without the win, right? So to pick one up, it's huge. Yeah.
Did you win much in like before the PGA Tour?
Not really. I mean, I won twice in Canada in summer of 14, and that was my last. I won a mini tour event like 4 or 5 years ago, and I'd won a couple gateways and some mini tour Scottsdale Open stuff, but nothing. I never won on the Korn Ferry Tour. But that was kind of some years without really, I was in the mix a couple times, but it's a whole different thing to actually close the darn thing out and get a trophy. So it's, and there's nothing that can, you can, I mean, you can get close all you want, but it's a whole different ballgame when you are legit, you're standing on the 18th tee with a one stroke lead.
Well, I always try to explain and kind of like show people or try to explain to people how in golf, and you could tell me if this kind of hit you at any point on Sunday, but you kind of forget how to win. Like, I'm not saying I've won prolifically, but out of college, I had won a couple pretty quickly and then, or pretty recently to when I turned pro. And then when I got to, when I won my first web event, I felt like it was kind of like, it was very fresh in my mind of like, you know, the things I'm going to go through and kind of my process to go through that. And then it was a while again before it happened. And I just feel like it kind of, it's so foreign that it's not just the nerves. It's like, it just doesn't happen in golf unless you're, you know, maybe one of, in our whole era, like 10 people who have done it like somewhat consistently. I feel like you forget. So you're now standing on the back nine on Sunday or even Saturday night going into Sunday. And it's more of a there's no muscle memory to it anymore. It just hasn't happened in so long. And it doesn't matter what term it is. It's just, it's hard to win anything in golf. So did you have to kind of like click yourself back into maybe some old memories, or did you feel like you were kind of already there to like win? Like you already had it in your head, how you were going to feel, how are you going to go about it and all those things?
Yeah, it had been a while, but a couple of people, you texted me Saturday night and you're just like, go walk around the mile like you're the best player there. Act like you're the best player and, you know, like own it type of a thing. And that was huge. And then Will Strickler, a buddy of mine from Canada, when I won, he caddied for me on the weekend when I won the second one. He's like, I walked around in Canada like I was, like I owned the place. And I ended up playing like that. And, you know, I didn't make a bogey in my last 63 holes for my second win up there. And it was just like no one had a chance on the weekend. It was just over. So I knew that I could do it. And it's not so much of strategy stuff. It's just literally just believing in yourself that you kind of have to fake it, that you're just, this is my day, this is going to happen. But back to your point, Max, was I think the young college kids are winning all the time now when they come out, Morikawa, Hovland, Wolf, because they just won in college. So like, what's the difference when they come on the web tour, the PJ tour, they just win. It's easy. And it, like you said, it doesn't change too much. But on the other side of that, like those top guys, Tiger started it and he's a joke, obviously. And even Phil, it's like, when you win that, they like normalize winning often, like a couple times a year. Like Tiger did it like four or five times a year. Like that's just not possible. And so it's normalized like that. It's, oh, JT just won the Players. Like, good job. Like you just won again. Like that's, but it's, well, he even talked about how hard it was for him at the Players. There was fans that are back for the first time and it was a, you know, you could argue it's a major. So it's still really hard for everybody. And that was one thing for me is like, Justin's still freaking out on 16, 17, 18 Players. Rory's freaking out trying to win. DJ, I assure you, is nervous inside. So everyone's feeling the same thing. So it's just a matter of, I mean, there's nothing you can control. You're not going to be able to control that stuff. You just kind of know that everyone else is feeling the same way you're feeling and just get it done.
Joel, I saw a quote you said, if anybody knows the journey you've gone through in life, obviously it makes a lot of sense. You said, I've seen life and death. Golf is not it. As much as we can portray it that way. I think one of the reasons you two guys are so popular on social media and with golf fans is that, you know, you understand that golf is kind of what you do for a living, but it's not what defines you. When you're going through what you went through this year where, you know, you're not making cuts and you're missing, you know, cut after cut and you're kind of wondering what happened last year. It was so much easier for me. How much harder is it to kind of keep that mentality where it doesn't feel like it's bigger than it is?
Yeah, it is. It is difficult and I kind of have to remind myself sometimes. I mean, I do have the in cancer bucket out with MD Anderson is like, and sometimes I just have to look at it and be like, dude, there's way bigger fish to fry than this stupid nine holes you're going to play to try to make the cut or this golf tournament. And but at the same time, you don't want to bump it down the ladder so far that you don't have like the competitive edge or you do get kind of fired up or you do like, I'm competitive. I'm going to get pissed off. Like it doesn't mean, it just means at the end of the day, like I can lay my head down on a pillow at night and be okay with who I am. I think I'm a good human being. I'm surrounded by good people and it doesn't really matter in the end of things, but it matters. Like you can't dumb it down so much that it doesn't matter and you can't like numb yourself to the whole thing. But it does help. I think that I can be happy without playing great golf. They don't have to go hand in hand. You can be still happy. You can still walk around, you're smiling, you can still be nice to people while shooting 75. You hope it doesn't last forever, but there's some people out here on tour who will shoot 65 and just be a jerk and be mopey and bitch about something. And I'm glad I don't go through life that way. That's for sure.
When you were on the mini tours and grinding, did you picture this day, and does it live up to it? And then how quickly have your goals kind of changed from then to even a year ago to now, sitting here now as a winner on the PGA Tour?
Yeah, I think everyone already dreamed of winning, right? You have that 15 footer and you kind of walk with it. You do a Tiger fist pump and you do it on the putting green all the time with buddies. But I don't know if I mean, to make it 5 years, I mean, last week was my fifth year, my 15th event of my fifth year. So I got my pension locked up as well.
That's
last
nice.
Week. So it was like double.
Let's go.
It was unbelievable. Yeah. So it was just kind of like a double. I don't know. But yeah, like, sure, do you dream big? But I don't know if I ever really believed I was going to make it. Like, I wasn't the All American. I believe I would have been an All American had I made it through, but I wasn't like this can't miss kid. I was always just kind of around and I was pretty good, but I wasn't. You know, no one ever was like, oh, looked at me on the range and like that guy right there, you know, he walks around. It's like, I'm pretty good at golf, but no one's ever pegged me to be like this, you know, superstar winner per se. So, I don't know if my dreams ever got this big. I mean, obviously I've dreamed of winning majors and stuff like that, which would be great too. But, I guess I don't know if I ever really kind of made it this far in my dreams, to be honest. And it was one of those things, honestly, it was a couple of years ago. I kind of had a flat spot as well. It was actually after I finished second to you, Max. Like, I had locked up my card. I had plenty of money. I was cruising around. I was doing just fine, but I didn't have any other goals. I was like, okay, now what? Like, my goal every year was just to keep my tour card, and I kept doing it earlier and earlier. So now, like, what do I do? Obviously, you want to win, but you have to do all these other things to win. Not like you just wake up one day and win. So it was one of those things of like resetting goals. Making, you know, and telling my team around them what the goals are, and being a part of that and kind of holding myself accountable to those things a little bit more day by day, more of a process thing than just an end result. So I think if I just keep kind of doing what I'm doing, I'm on the right path, obviously. I'm working harder and smarter than I have. And there are some goals out there for sure that I have, but Tour Championship is always one at the end of the year. I think it's a big deal. I want to get top 50 in the world. You know, those two things kind of go hand in hand a little bit, but at the same time, I just want to continue getting a little bit better. Every single year since I turned pro, I've gotten better results-wise, and every part of my game has gotten a little bit better. So it's kind of cliche just to get better all the time, but that's kind of what I'm doing. And, I guess my biggest goal that out there is I want to be a Ryder Cupper in 20, whatever it is. I don't know how to do math. 2023, 2024. So
Just two to it. 2021 plus two.
Yeah, just add how many houses you own.
That's a great one. That could change. That could easily change. You know who I kept getting messages about who you looked like when you went from bucket to cap? I kept getting Fred Couples messages. People kept saying you kind of look like Couples. That's a compliment right there, Joel Damon.
I'm immediately aroused.
Yeah, well, he has a little more swagger. He's definitely better looking, but it's weird. So Freddie's from Seattle area. I've kind of had comparisons. He was my favorite golfer growing up. I kind of have a layback kind of attitude, same thing. I actually got to play with him 2 years ago at Napa for the first time I ever met him, and it was awesome. And he sent me a cool text last night, said, hey, good job, you know, we're rooting for you. But when I won state of high school in my freshman year, like, the main article was how I looked like a young Freddie Couples, and I kind of acted like one. And so kind of a big deal. I don't know.
I would have walked around that in my pocket for a while.
You would have made like a shirt out of the article.
Freddie's my guy. I've always looked up to him. He's awesome. And I have kind of got that. I mean, maybe it's just a Northwest thing, but I've had it a couple times more. It has not happened recently. I think that I've maybe a little more frumpy and swagger's not quite there, but... Anything with Freddie's cool with me.
Yeah, he kind of makes it hard on the rest of us.
Yeah.
Max, I always love asking this question. I think I asked you this question when we did a podcast after you won Wells Fargo. But Joel, what has been the coolest thing that's happened since the win that you had no idea would happen and nobody told you would happen besides doing this podcast?
Yeah, clearly this. I think it's the overall, I guess I always know that Gino and I were well liked on tour. I mean, you know, people are nice to us. We're nice to everybody. We kind of get along with everybody. But the outpouring of the totality of everything, I think, has just been really cool. And I think it's even surprised kind of Lana a little bit too. It's like, I mean, to have like Justin Thomas tweet me, or, you know, like Fowl, like some of these top guys are being like, oh man, this is awesome. Way to go. This is really cool. You know, Freddie texts me, I had some other baseball players or other athletes are like, hey, this is awesome. You know, or the natural reaction that me, Gino, and Lana had on 18, a lot of people are reacting to that, I think, and just the raw emotion. And, you know, maybe I've downplayed how much I wanted to win at times. There's a quote out there that said, I didn't care if I won, if I made $1.5 million every year. Well, I mean, maybe that wasn't quite as true as I wanted it to be back then. So just, I think just the outpouring of everybody and, the totality of it all, and how much, I mean, it's good to be liked. I mean, it feels good to feel like you're liked, and especially by your peers. And, it's kind of fun. I mean, I walked around, registered today. You see a bunch of people in the hotel this week, and it doesn't get old when people tell you good job. That's for sure.
Did Rory call you yet to ask if he wants to play the Zurich with you, or if you want to play the
Zurich with him? That's the one I'm holding out on. I know that he's struggling a little bit right now. Hey, Rory, I've been there, bud. It'll turn around. I know you haven't won in a while. Maybe if you want to sit down for over a beer, I can kind of talk you through it a little bit if you want. But I don't think Rory's calling. I'm going to stick with my boy Ryan Brim, the long ball whacker guy. We stayed together last week in the same house. So we had a good vibe there. And I'm going to dink and dunk it, and he's going to go bombing at Zurich, and maybe we can catch lightning in a bottle again.
If I worked for like Rory's, I'm sure, expansive team of people around him that do probably a lot of stuff, and somehow he hired me to do like his social media, I immediately after you won would have taken that picture of Gino's letter he wrote him asking him to work for him and just responded like in a quote and be like, yeah, you could do it right now. You just gotta quit Joel right after he won. I think Gino finally was in a spot where he'd be like, you know what? No, we're good.
Yeah. It's pretty funny because Gino, a quick Rory story, when Gino went to hit the caddy shot on the 17th hole, I played the front nine that day and we just walked out for him to hit the shot. And lo and behold, Rory's on the tee. And like Rory keeps kind of popping up in our life and kind of funny moments kind of like that. And so I go, Rory, I gotta tell you, if Gino makes this, you've got to let him caddy for you. Like that's got to be the deal. And Harry's right there, his caddy. And I'm like, Harry, no offense, you're going to be stuck with me this week, but I'm just trying to get Gino a little more money. He's and it was kind of funny because there's laughing. He's like, and Tony Finau's there. He's like, yeah, Rory, you have to do that. You absolutely have to do that. And Rory's like, no, I'm not doing that. And Case of All actually went in. So Gino flagged it a little long, but we're still grinding on Rory. We're going to get to him here one of these days. But for now, I think Gino's stuck with me.
Well, Joel, I have nothing else. Max, if you're good, we'll let you get the dinner. We appreciate you taking the time. Good luck this week. I don't know what it's going to look like. I don't think there's much expectations from anyone. Maybe go out there and just go back to back. I mean, might as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'm playing well. The prep is going to be a little bit shorter than normal, but when you're playing well, you're playing well. I kind of feel like I'm free rolling a little bit. So I get a better tee time. So I get to play with some cool cats now. I got Tony Finau and Cameron Champ. So they'll be hitting their 2-iron past my driver. But
is that really your group right after the victory?
Yeah, a little feature group for the kid.
Jeez.
Yeah. So I got that. The other thing with this whole feature group is I'm going to have to watch my mouth a little bit more out there. The fines start racking up if you get on TV.
You got
too
more
much.
Money now, though. You can just pay it off.
Yeah. It's true.
Actually, as someone that's done plenty of PGA Tour Live over the years, it just gives us something more to say, because once you cuss, then we can say we really apologize for that language. We don't believe in it. We don't say it ourselves. It's ridiculous.
We don't condone that.
Yeah, that's just that's not what a PGA Tour player should be doing. Joel, congrats again. Awesome to see. We were all rooting for you. Max has got one more thing.
He always likes to ask this, so he asked it to me. I'm going to ask it to you because it feels good to answer it. Joel, who'd you beat at the PGA Tour event in the Dominican Republic?
I beat everybody.
I'm proud of you, buddy.
131-0 last week. That's my bad.
Hell yeah. Well, I'm really proud of you. I know Shane's proud of you. It's been a truly, truly cool week to watch one of the best guys, not just in golf, but on the planet, get it done with another guy right by his side who we all love dearly. So we're really, really happy for you. Please go get a dub next week or this week so you can have a tee time at Augusta. There's your next big piece of the pie we got to get done.
That's awesome. Yeah, thank you guys. It's fun. Good to know you guys the last little bit, especially you, Shane, but Max, thanks for the inspiration the last month or two, a couple nice texts, and I'm going to Vegas next week while you're at the mat. I got to go to Vegas again because that's what you're supposed to do.
So you have to.
I'm going.
And last up, one of my favorite PGA Tour victories of the last few years belonged to Nate Lashley. At the time, I talked about Nate Lashley's win back on the Clubhouse days, the Clubhouse podcast that I started years ago. I was so happy to have Nate on. You know, I knew Nate a little bit at U of A. I just kind of knew his name and knew who he was. But I obviously followed, a guy that was going to Arizona and doing great things. And then to kind of follow Nate's career through. At the time, I talked a lot about Nate and his journey as a professional golfer, because so many of the days and times we talk about the great young players and kind of the can't-miss prospects, and Nate was not that. Nate was a great collegiate player that had to go through the ranks. At the time, I talked about not just the Web.com victory, now a PGA Tour win for Nate Lashley, but, I mean, this is a guy that won three times on the PGA Tour Latino America Tour. He won in the Utah Open twice. He won something called the Waterloo Open twice, the Colorado Open, the Wyoming Open. You know, Nate is a journeyman, and he's a great player, but yes, he has that journeyman moniker, and that only gets bumped once you start to win on the PGA Tour. So I loved having Nate on the podcast after his victory in 2019, and I think you'll enjoy hearing from Nate after that victory. And we welcome into the clubhouse the Rocket Mortgage Classic champion, Nate Lashley. Nate, I gotta say, first things first, is Golf Channel and NBC always has the collegiate lettering next to the players' leaderboards. I feel like I always look up and there's two or three ASU pitchforks. I never see a U of A next to anybody's name, so thank you for finally allowing that to happen. I feel like it's been forever since somebody from the University of Arizona won. I can't even think of the last player to do it.
Well, I'd probably have to be Furyk.
I guess if you went back, yeah. I mean, it's been a while.
Yeah, it has been a little while. Yeah, it's great to be able to represent U of A and put the Wildcats up there on the leaderboard.
So I was talking to you a little bit before we got going. You win, and I mean, it's your first PGA Tour win. Obviously, career highlight. I can only imagine what went down internally and emotionally Saturday night as you went in with the big lead, Sunday throughout the round, and we'll get into some of that. But the last couple of days, did you ever expect for kind of everything that comes with a win to happen? The media, the interest, the kind of people reaching out and trying to get a little piece, including, of course, myself. Did you expect a little bit of this? Was this more or less than you maybe thought would come with something like this?
Oh yeah, it's way more. It's been a crazy couple of days. It's just been constantly on my phone, constantly getting back to people. I flew to New York the day after the tournament, did the Tuesday, the Today Show yesterday morning, and then flew out here, did some more phone interviews, got a couple interviews this morning already, got to have the PGA Tour media this afternoon. So yeah, it's been wild, but it's great. It's a great feeling. You know, I wouldn't trade it for anything, and I'm more than happy to try to accommodate anybody that wants to cover my story. I think it's awesome.
Yeah, I wanted to get into the win first and foremost. And, you know, you're a guy that had a lot of success early in his career. And, people at this point have kind of heard the backstory of collegiately, you were a great player. And, you bounced around so many tours and here and there. You played well at the U.S. Open. You opened with 67. It was a good week for you at Pebble Beach. At what point this season, was it recently or was it this week, or was it, the U.S. Open? What point did you start to feel like, not just, hey, I belong out here, but, hey, I think I can compete and possibly win something against my peers? When did that kind of start to creep into your mind?
Well, I think, right away at the beginning of the year, I started playing really well at the first event in Napa, I was in the top 10 going in the final round, and we had that crazy storm that, I mean, it was blowing 40 mile an hour, and I played really well, and I think I finished around 17th or something like that, and then followed up a couple weeks later playing, and then Sanderson Farms, played well there, and then played pretty well at RSM, and then into the new year, played really well at in Palm Springs in the desert, and I think I finished 12th. So it was kind of a build up and getting more comfortable out here on the PGA Tour, which isn't an easy thing to do, but just kind of building up to this point of getting more and more confidence and getting more comfortable out here. And then this last week, I suppose, it just kind of all came together last week. Just nothing could go wrong. And when you get to 25 under, obviously you're hitting it well and you're making putts. So it was just a dream come true.
Yeah, when you shoot 63 twice, it's probably going to be a pretty decent week. I was going to ask, I mean, you play so well to win and you kind of run away with it. Was there one thing that seemed to be working better recently for you? Or is it just simply knowing now you have the game and just being more comfortable between the ears?
I think being more comfortable and getting a little better mentally on the golf course for sure has definitely helped. I mean, it's not easy to go out there and think well in your first year. You know, you're constantly thinking about, you know, that top 125 and you know, how many points you're going to get. And there's just a lot of things. But getting more comfortable. And then with my golf game, I feel like I've kind of improved on around everything. You know, I'm really striking my irons really well. I'm driving it a little straighter. Short games got better. And then I've just found something in my putting last week, and I was really putting really well, like hitting my lines, good speed, and hitting solid putts.
What was it you found? Was there something, I mean, was it just technique, or was it just some, was there like a coaching tip or something like that?
Yeah, it was a little, just little technique. I felt like I was just moving a little bit on my putts, coming out of my putts. So it was really just staying still on my putts, making sure my head stayed still and nothing was really moving except for my shoulders. And it really paid off. I started putting really nicely.
For people that pay attention to golf, you know, they look at the PGA Tour. Maybe they watch the European Tour. Maybe they watch the Corn Ferry Tour, the Senior Tour, the LPGA. Give me just a rough guesstimation yourself. How many mini tours do you think, different mini tours, do you think you played on over the years?
A rough estimate, I'd say I played in different events and at least 5 or 6 different mini tours, along with hundreds of other tournaments, you know, from state opens to pro-ams to, I mean, all over, you know, the United States, a lot in the Midwest, but, you know, a lot of Colorado opens, Waterloo opens, Nebraska opens, you know, Gateway tours, you know, Dakotas tours. I mean, I was everywhere.
And you say you were everywhere. I mean, it's, you know, I think also something that's missed is the competition out there. I mean, it's crazy how low you have to go on mini tours to compete, not just to win, but to compete. And, you know, you're talking about going through these state opens and playing on, you know, the Dakotas Tour, playing Gateway, you know, kind of balancing around the country. I mean, this isn't a glamorous life, for goodness sakes. You're staying at, you know, a cheap motel or staying with a buddy, or maybe they put you up with a host family and you're hoping to make a check. And was there a point in your life where you were like, you know, I mean, I know you decided to do something else for a little bit. Was there a moment in your life where you're like, I'm not going to be a professional golfer for a living?
Yeah, there was definitely some times when playing really poorly that, you know, I felt like I was done. And, you know, it's not easy. Golf's not an easy sport, that's for sure. There's ups and downs. But I just stuck it out and kept grinding and trying to get better, and it paid off, obviously. But, yeah, like you said, mini tour golf, you know, it's no joke. There's so many great players out there. I still remember one tournament. I was in Utah Open. It's a 3-round tournament, and this was, I think, 2015. I was 20 or 21 under par with 3 holes to go, and I was a shot behind a guy. I had to birdie 2 out of my last 3 holes just to beat him by a shot. So in 3 rounds, 23 under par. And I mean, it's like you said, there's just so many great golfers out there. And, you know, for a lot of them, it just takes, you know, that one break to get out on the PGA Tour, and you never know what can happen from there.
Yeah. It's so interesting. You know, the PGA Tour does a great job in so many areas, but sometimes, you know, they kind of forget about the Nate Lashleys of the world. And I say that because we focus so much on the super duper duper stars and we promote them and we push them out there. And your story to me would lend itself to hundreds, if not thousands, of guys out there that are either grinding or hoping to make it or still have that twinkle in their eye about maybe if this breaks my way, I've got a chance to get through. And I think we forget sometimes of these stories, you know, of a guy that has this event that he finishes 10th and the next week he finishes 5th and then he wins and all of a sudden he believes in himself. He takes that to the web, now the Corn Ferry, and maybe he plays well for a season there. And then, of course, boom, now he's on the PGA Tour. And a couple of years later, he's a PGA Tour winner. I just feel like these stories maybe don't get celebrated enough because it's really what pro golf is.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you talk about the PGA Tour. I think they've done a great job over the last, you know, I don't know, 6-7 years of getting these developmental tours. You know, they brought in the Latin American Tour, right, the China Tour, the Canadian Tour, and that gives guys the opportunity to move up to that Corn Ferry Tour without Q School having to go through Q School. Because Q School, you know, I did it for years. I could be playing great going into Q School. You know, you make it through first stage, you shoot 174 in second stage, and all of a sudden you miss by a shot or two, and you're like, wow, I just had a great year, played great all year, and I just missed getting to final stage by a shot or two. And now you have to wait a whole another 12 months to go back to that Q School. So I think they've done a great job of getting these developmental tours, and you know, that's how I was able to get to that Corn Ferry Tour and then ultimately to the PGA Tour. So I would recommend any young player or anybody looking for somewhere to play to go out and play those tours. Go play that Latin American Tour. It's a great tour. It's ran great. Same with the Canadian and same with the China Tour. You know, it's a way to move up.
Yeah, and I mean, for you, you had a chance in your life to learn how to win. I mean, you won on different tours, and you're building your way up to this moment. When you go into Sunday with this big lead at a PGA Tour event, you know, and I mean, obviously, we were doing the Senior Open, and Steve Stricker had a similar big lead, and he said after, you know, going into Sunday, it's stressful because the only story you can really make is the collapse. So as you go into Sunday, what was your mentality heading into the final round, knowing if I don't win this, it's almost a bigger story than if I do win it, because, you know, people, of course, love to root for the hero and they love to root for kind of the collapse.
Yeah, it's exactly that. You know, I was extremely nervous because with that big of a lead, you know, it's only happened, I don't know the exact statistics of it, but it's only happened a very few times where somebody's come in with a 6-shot lead or more and ended up losing the tournament. So there was that.
I hope you didn't know that number before. I hope nobody told you that stat before Sunday.
I didn't know the stat. Do you know the stat offhand?
No. I'm just saying. I was hoping that's not something somebody came up to you and went, "Hey, by the way, this only happened twice where the guys collapsed." You're like, "Thanks a lot, man."
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's, I didn't watch any TV. I didn't, you know, look into anything before that final round. I didn't want to know.
No, I wouldn't.
But, it adds that pressure, you know, but, at the same time, that lead is, it also gives you a cushion where if you do make a couple bogeys, you know, you probably are most likely still going to be in the lead, and nobody made a run at me the last day, which was lucky on my part. I figured somebody would at least get to 20 under or past 20 under par, and it just never happened.
Yeah, I mean, that's the bonus of the big lead, like you said. It's like it allows you, even on a soft golf course, even on one the guys are kind of tearing apart, to kind of play simple golf early. I want to ask, you know, Saturday night, what was your Saturday night, I guess, regiment as you headed into the final round personally, as you were getting ready? I know you said you didn't watch any TV, but what'd you do to just kind of feel normal?
I had a couple buddies in town, so we just went out to dinner. We had a couple beers, just, you know, talked. We tried to, I told them I don't want to talk about golf. I want to, you know, anything else but to talk about. And let's just have a normal night, a normal dinner. And then, you know, I went back to the hotel, and I fell asleep fairly easy, you know, at first. And then I was awake at about 2:30 in the morning, and I was wide awake, and so I was up for there for a couple hours, and then I fell back asleep until, you know, 7:30 or so, and then I was up and at them, and just tried to stay busy and take my mind off of golf, and when it was on it, I was just trying to think of the positives and get ready to go out and play.
I love that you said you had a couple of beers the night before. I feel like that's something that will be one of the things people go, see, I like this Nate Lashley guy. I had a couple of beers after. Hopefully he had a couple of beers on Sunday night too, for goodness sakes. That was the Rory quote after the Canadian Open. I love, he said, I don't, they said, do you want the US Open to start tomorrow? And he goes, no, I'll probably be hungover tomorrow. That doesn't sound like fun at all.
Exactly.
And I wanted to get in a little to the U.S. Open. You played really well at Pebble in that opening round, kind of got yourself a little bit into the mix. Was that pretty helpful going into the week for you, going into this past week, considering, you know, you're playing a major championship and you're battling with some of the biggest names in golf?
Yeah, definitely. Like, you know, seeing you, I saw you there.
That's huge. Yeah, that was going to be.
Boosted confidence, yeah. But, you know, shooting that first round 4-under and going a bogey-free round gave me a lot of confidence. You know, that's a U.S. Open course. I played great that day. You know, I played pretty well the second round, too, but I missed a lot of fairways just by a yard or two. And when you do that, it's tough to score. And I was basically chipping out 4 or 5 times that day and made some bogeys. But, you know, playing well at the U.S. Open, yeah, it gave me a lot of confidence. It gave me the perspective that, you know, I can play with these guys, and that was at the highest level, so it did give me a lot of confidence, and it was great. Being at Pebble is unlike any place that I've ever played, so all around it was just an awesome week and really enjoyed it.
Who was the most random person that has reached out to you, either called you or texted you, or also the coolest, I guess you could say, person that sent you a note that said congrats?
There's been a few. Scott Van Pelt sent me a message on Twitter. That was cool. I messaged him back and said, when are you going to get me on SportsCenter? And I haven't heard anything back. So
I'm going to text him after we get off this and say, Nate Lashley, what the hell, SVP?
Yeah. Tell him to get on that, man.
I am. I'll yell at him.
But yeah, there's been a few. And then getting to meet Carson Daly yesterday. He's a cool dude. He loves his golf. So I'm hoping to, you know, get to play golf with him sometime. But you know, just some of those guys. You know, I've known Dan Whitney, who's Larry the Cable Guy. He sent me a great message, and I can call him a good friend now. He's just a great guy. But you know, everybody from you to all the media people they've been absolutely great to me, and I couldn't ask for more.
So I had Max Homa on. He kind of the week after he won the Wells Fargo, and one thing that I find very interesting for guys like you and Max who, you know, we're playing on the PGA Tour, but now all of a sudden everything changes, is your scheduling changes. Have you had a chance to sit down, kind of crunch the schedule now that you can kind of pick and choose where you're going to play and what events you're going to, maybe not play in some of the things you expected to play in, and you're going to add some that you weren't in initially?
Yeah, I was planning on playing this week, so I just came this week, and then I wasn't sure what I was going to do for the John Deere. I'm going to play John Deere and then take the flight over from John Deere to the British, and then go from British to the FedEx Cup St. Jude. So I'm going to play 4 in a row, which is going to be a lot. But I figure you're playing well, kind of ride it out, and then I'll take Wyndham off and then go into the FedEx Cup playoffs. And hopefully, like I said, I've told other people my goal is to make that tour championship at Eastlake now. So hopefully get to play all three of those. And then I think we have a couple of weeks off before the new season starts. And I haven't looked into the new season, but I'll just have to go from there. And, you know, I plan on playing quite a bit in the fall and just kind of ride this high out and enjoy it.
Nate, I have to ask you, going into this week, you know, you just won. You've got all this stuff going on. I mean, all these celebrities are reaching out to you. Now you're like the famous Nate Lashley. What do you expect as you have to tee up again on Thursday to start a whole nother PGA Tour event? I mean, how do you get yourself mentally back into the state of, all right, time to grind, time to play?
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I went out and played 9 holes yesterday, and it was just a really relaxing 9 holes. It was different than my normal practice rounds of you know, really focusing in on what I'm trying to do on each hole and hitting a lot of chips, hitting a lot of putts. It was more of a relaxed practice round. But that's the beauty of getting a win, is now I can, you know, kind of take a step back and relax a little bit more and not be quite so hyper focused on every little aspect, which will maybe allow me to enjoy, you know, some of this some of these tournaments a little more, whereas before I was pretty high pressure. I was hanging around that top 125 and really just needing to get back in there. But now being comfortably inside that and have some job security, I can relax a little bit.
You win on Sunday, you know, you make the final putt, you do the interviews, you go do media, you do all that stuff. When does it sink in? You're like, I'm gonna play in the Masters next year. Because I feel like as a golfer, that has to, even no matter what you've done in your career, no matter how old you are, I feel like getting into that first Masters has to be, it has to be kind of a pinch yourself type of moment.
Getting to play in the Masters, you know, that's going to be great. Getting the U.S. Open at Wingfoot, I'm not into that yet, but I'll obviously, if I get in that top 50, that's my goal, to play in that, getting to play the Players, the PGA, the British, you know, it's just the huge perks of getting a win is amazing. But I think it kind of hit me the next morning. I woke up and I was like, wow, you know, this is a big change. And that was one of the things that went through my head, was getting to play in the Masters, because that's everybody's dream of just getting to play Augusta, let alone playing the Masters. It's a dream come true.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you, you said you're out on the road and you're going to play 4 straight weeks. I got back to Phoenix on Monday and it's like 117. So I'm just going to say, stay on the road. There's no rush back here. There's absolutely no reason. Ashton is going to be here. I'm going to be here. You don't need to hurry, for goodness sakes. It is brutal right now. I'm going to actually go try to hit range balls today. And I'm going to actually pull the bucket hat out. I haven't had the bucket hat out, and I don't think in about 10 months. So it's a little steamy here right now.
Yeah, that was one of the other reasons I was thinking about the schedule is, you know, when you go back and it's really hot like that, you don't do a whole lot anyway. So I figured I might as well stay out on the road and get some more tournaments in.
Last question, and I ask this to everybody that's ever won on the PGA Tour. And you can be honest with us, or you don't have to. That's fine. How many times did you refresh your bank account app on your phone on Monday morning?
The wires, they don't get transferred till Wednesday. So this morning was
okay.
That was one of the first things I checked. I wanted to make sure that PGA Tour's paying me and not trying to hold out. So, you know, the wire went through, so it was a relief. You know, I didn't know if I was going to have to go in and talk to somebody, but, you know, I'm all good. So
yeah,
it's a different feeling seeing something like that, and it's pretty wonderful. It gives you some security and something I'll never forget, that's for sure.
Yeah, it was a wild week. It was crazy. Like I said, it was a bummer for me. I mean, just in the sense of not being able to kind of get to watch you hole by hole and kind of root on Sunday. We were obviously covering this senior, but I had a couple of buddies, including, you know, one of our friends that was updating me on the lead of yours, and it's cool, man. It was cool to see you at Pebble. I was pumped for you there, and it's wild. You know, it's just wild when somebody that, like I said, has kind of been grinding for so long and has been not giving up pulls something like this off, and you just sit back and kind of enjoy all the fruits of it, because it's a very, very cool thing to see, and I'm pumped for you, Nate. It's awesome. Hey, you know what you should do? Win another one. Maybe win a few more. Win 10 more. You know, it's kind of fun to win, isn't it?
It is. It's a lot of fun, and that's what I'm going for. My goal is to be one of those guys that's competing each week. So, you know, if I can continue to keep getting better like I am, I can be one of those guys.
Well, I appreciate the time, buddy. Have fun this week. Have fun. Hey, have fun in Ireland. That's going to be awesome. You can have Guinness as your two beers before the final round. That'll be the added bonus. And have you played any of those? Have you ever played in Ireland?
No, I haven't. I've never been over to Europe, actually.
Really? First time? Do you have a passport?
Yeah, I have a passport. Yep.
Okay, that would have been the rush delivery, I guess, if you hadn't had that. That'll be exciting then, man. I mean, you know, that has to be crazy too, right? Just the all of a sudden, hey, I'm in the Open Championship. Here we go. I mean, that has to be, of all the things that got to hit you in the face after the win, you know, that's one of them. I'm assuming, considering where you grow up, you've played pretty well in the wind before. So hey, right? I mean, go over there and use the kind of the, I guess you could say, Nebraska in you to get it around the golf course.
That's right. Yeah, it is windy in Nebraska, so hey, I don't mind it. If it's bad weather, I'll embrace it. If it's great weather, hey, that's a positive. That's a bonus too. So I'm just happy I'm going over there and gonna enjoy it.
All right, that should do it for the week. Hope you enjoyed Best of Winners, Nate, Max, Joel. I hope you guys had a great 2021. Hope you had a good holiday and are prepared to have a good new year. And we'll be back in 2022. Got some exciting stuff on the horizon. If you like the podcast, will you rate it? subscribe to it, tell your friends about it. And if you've gotten to this point, I just wanted to let you know that we are running by kind of year's end something on the Get a Grip Instagram account. It's at Get a Grip Pod. We're giving away some Vokey wedges inspired by this here podcast. We've got three wedges we're giving away. If you go to the Instagram account, you'll see how to win, how to be entered. It's very, very simple. It's very, very easy. But check that out because these wedges are clean, they're sweet, they're stamped the right way, and I think they'll be something you enjoy. So have a great week, and we'll talk to you in 2022.
Get a Grip with Shane Bacon is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.